I'm Matt Cooper and you're listening to First Impressions, the podcast where Irish personalities reveal the sporting heroes and events that first enthralled and inspired them. And in this edition, we're joined by a player who many believe to be the finest women's footballer of all time. Having made her inter-county bow at the age of just 13, she would go on to play a pivotal role in her county's four All-Ireland successes and in the process secure a remarkable 11 Ladies Gaelic Football All-Stars. Her career is since taking a new twist as she's established herself as a force in the AFL women's competition in Australia too, with the Greater Western Sydney Giants. Her autobiography, Game Changer, won the Bord Gáis Energy Sports Book of the Year in 2018, and she remains one of the most universally popular athletes in Ireland. We're delighted to be joined on First Impressions by Cora Staunton. Cora, you've been involved in so many sports, but what particular sport do you first remember being introduced to and how?
Yeah, I suppose the first sport I probably remember most would be probably have to be GAA Gaelic football. And it probably was through national school. I was lucky. I grew up obviously in Cairn O'Connor, a rural village just outside Castlebar. And we had a principal called Arthur Sullivan who kind of involved us in all sports. But yeah, I think GAA would probably be the first one, followed closely secondly by actually handball and racquetball, because we lived, our school was right beside a ball alley, so we were in and out to that every day. So yeah, it'd be probably Gaelic football, but followed closely by certainly by handball and racquetball were the next two.
And were there many other girls playing Gaelic football at the time, or were you playing largely with the boys?
No, I was the only one in school at the time. So I, you know, in our school at the time, probably was close to 100 kids. I had a big enough class, was 14 in our class, 7 boys and 7 girls, but I was the only girl that played. And that kind of was the team right through, probably from about 7 till I went and joined the boys team. And then there was one other girl on the under 10s boys team. And that was the team probably right through till I was about 11 or 12. There wasn't many girls playing many sports at all, and certainly not playing Gaelic football.
And how did the boys treat you? I mean, were they good about making sure that they passed the ball to you? Were they able to get involved in the same sort of physical contact and interaction that they would have with the other boys?
Yeah, certainly in primary school, yeah, because obviously you're in their class, and actually my brother was in my class as well. So yeah, I think they kind of realized straight away that you're quite talented and you're a good, so yeah, they always wanted to have you on your team. I suppose when you were playing with them, you know, they were quite protective of you. You know, when I was playing with the Ballintubber boys team, they were quite protective of you and always looked out for you. I suppose there was a lot of times at the start that a boy probably wouldn't want to mark you and would be like, well, I'm not marking the girl. But they'd soon realise that, you know, after he maybe put the ball in the back of the net once or twice, that you're quite talented, and they had their hands full. So, you know, maybe for the first few months you might have been treated a bit differently, but you were known for being a potent scorer. They soon, there was not many people that wanted to mark you. So, yeah, it was different, but, you know, it was a great time. I loved playing with the boys, and certainly it was a huge area of development for me when I was young.
Any of the boys who went on, did they to become significant footballers?
Yeah, I suppose the biggest one that I played with from Ballintubber would be Alan Dillon, obviously, who had a long career at Mayo and is still playing with Ballintubber today. So, yeah, I played on a couple of underage teams with him from under 12, under 10, under 12, and a couple of games at under 14. So, yeah, he would be the most prominent player. His brother Gary obviously played a little bit underage with Mayo as well. So, yeah, I'd still, you know, be very, very close friends with Alan, and obviously we're from the same club, so I'd still go and watch him play.
And at what age did you realise that the boys and the girls would go their separate ways, that there would come a time when you wouldn't be playing with and against the boys?
Yeah, it was probably around the age of maybe 10 or 11, even though I continued to play with the boys for another while after that. But my first introduction to girls only was community games, and then with Cara at the time, so which is our parish. We started a girls' community game, both soccer and a Gaelic football team. And we got to Mosny actually with the Gaelic football and got to an All-Ireland final. And that was kind of our first introduction to really competitive girls' sport. And from there, you know, I still have been playing with the boys, but it kind of after about the age of 12, when I went into kind of first year in school, you know, I stopped playing with the boys at under 14 level.
Was there ever a fear that you wouldn't be able to get to play because there simply wouldn't be enough girls or women available to make up a team or to play against?
Not in our area, actually. We had very proactive people. We had a club for girls at that stage. We just didn't have an underage section. So we had a junior team. Our club was formed in Cairnacun in 1986. So I would have just been the age of 4, coming on 5 at that stage. So there was football for adults, women at that time, but there was no underage sections of the club. So I knew, at some stage that'll have to start developing. And we had a guy called Jimmy Corbett, who passed away last year, that formed the club and, developed all our underage and everything. So I was lucky enough, it was always there. And, they were very proactive in the men's section as well, getting girls involved, after myself played, and Michelle McGing was another girl that played. There's been, streams of girls going through the underage academy and the boys as well.
How important were family members to getting you involved in sport, and in what way?
Yeah, I suppose I'm from a family of 8, so I have 4 brothers and 3 sisters. So I'm second youngest, and I'm kind of mixed in between all boys, a brother younger than me and 2 brothers older than me. So yeah, they were out obviously in the front garden every day after school, kicking a football. And we had in where I was from, we had our classmates that lived nearby. So we had many a game on the front lawn in many different gardens each evening. So yeah, family were huge. All my brothers and sisters played some level of sport, but none of them continued maybe after the age of 16. They were quite talented, but just obviously different things took over. And I suppose I just kept stuck at it and kept involved. But yeah, they've been massive. And obviously my mom and dad bringing me different places and stuff as well would have a huge interest in it. So yeah, they'd have been, even now, in the support they give you, they're huge.
And now, Cora, given male pride, how did the boys in the family deal with the fact that their sister was a more talented athlete than any of them?
Yeah, I suppose maybe at the start, when we're certainly on teams, I was on the under 10, under 12 teams with my brothers growing up, to my 2 brothers. And yeah, sometimes when you get a game ahead of them, they weren't too happy, or your performance was better than them. But I think they soon realized, I suppose, from an early age, I was, performing quite well. And I suppose by the age of 13 and a half, I joined the Mayo senior team. So at that stage, they knew that they probably weren't going to catch me. But yeah, they always supported me and still do today.
Yeah, what other sports did you play as a child?
Yeah, so obviously growing up, as I said, handball and racquetball, because we have the ball alley in Cairnacun, was huge. I loved them 2 sports, actually. That was probably the first sport that I won in All-Ireland handball. And again, I don't really remember too well. I was only having a chat to my school principal a few years back, and he talked about bringing me up to the handball All-Ireland for school. And we played rounders, we played basketball, indoor soccer, because we had a hall there. Soccer itself, uni hoc, any sport that you could play, volleyball, badminton, anything. I played as many sports as I could growing up. And then obviously, as I got older, I kind of had to stick to Gaelic football. Obviously I dabbled a little bit in soccer and rugby for a few years as well. And yeah, so, just as you get older, you probably have to concentrate in one. But I played many a sport and loved all of them.
Why did you pick Gaelic football ahead of, say, soccer or rugby or other sports? Was it because you felt you were naturally better at it? Or was it a sort of a community thing that you were involved with people that you wanted to play with in that particular sport?
Yeah, it was kind of not a bit of both. It was really obviously Gaelic football was the biggest sport within the parish at the time. Women's rugby wasn't a thing growing up, so I didn't have the opportunity. I kind of played that later in my career. Soccer was there, but not to the same level of Gaelic football. There wasn't as many competitions. While we had a club over the road, Ballyglass Soccer Club, they didn't provide for girls at the time. So Any of the sports I played would have been in national school, or when I went to Ballinrobe, to the community school for secondary school. But before that, it would have always been Gaelic football, because it was the primary sport that was on offer, and the GA club was the hub of the community and you went to. And I suppose from an early age, we were lucky. We started to get to All-Irelands and get to county finals, and we had a very, very successful bunch. And we won a lot through our early days, certainly.
Cora, it strikes me that you must have spent nearly all your time as a child playing sport. Did you actually ever sit down and watch much sport or go to many sporting occasions?
Yeah, even now, yeah, I'm a bit of a sports fanatic, or a sports nerd, if you want to call it. Yeah, if my time wasn't out in the garden till 10 o'clock at night playing football, I was either watching it. And even now, I wouldn't really watch much other things than sport on the TV. Yeah, so growing up, yeah, I was a huge Premier League soccer fan. So that was probably the biggest sport because, again, it was on TV, mainstream TV that you could watch it. So, yeah, certainly growing up, soccer and obviously Gaelic football were the two things I'd watch on TV. But, yeah, I was a huge Man United fan. Yeah, so I would have been still probably not doing as well today, but I would have been a huge Man United football fan, Manchester United growing up. Obviously, through my kind of when I was 10, 11, that was the start of the great era for Man United, the 92-93 team, and moving on to all the premierships they won, and obviously with Fergie being manager. And obviously, I'm a huge Roy Keane fan as well. So, yeah, I used to love watching Man United. Probably a little bit harder to watch nowadays, but, yeah, I'd still be a supporter of them.
And what was it about Roy Keane that made him your favourite player?
Obviously, first of all, he was Irish and, you know, he was from Cork. But I just loved the way he went about it. He was very driven. You know, he wanted to win and at all costs, and it didn't matter. And just the success he had, you know, he went out week in, week out, and performed. He was just such a driven guy, and, you know, he had such commitment. And, you know, he probably wasn't the most talented, you know, soccer player at Manchester United, but he was certainly the one that worked the hardest. Yeah, so I just loved his attitude and the way he went about things. You know, he was a super player for Man United, and someone to come from Cork and captain Man United for, I think, about 13 or 14 years and win all they did was just amazing.
Would you be brave enough to tell him to his face that he wasn't the most talented?
Probably not. I've only ever met him once, and I went over when he took over manager of Sunderland. I went over to watch a Sunderland Man United game, and Man United bet them 4-0, and stayed outside the stadium for about 3 hours to actually meet him. But he was actually very nice when I met him. But I don't know if I'd be brave enough to tell him. I'd say he'd probably admit it himself. He probably wasn't the most talented, but yeah, he certainly worked the hardest. And, you know, he's had a huge career within football and obviously within coaching now.
Is there a particular game from your childhood that you can remember watching that particularly stands out for you as a great memory?
Yeah, I suppose that'd probably go back to... you know, you have to look at Mayo over the years. You know, I remember being in Croke Park in 1989, vaguely, when Mayo lost the All-Ireland to Cork, but probably don't remember it as well as if you move on into 96 for both the drawn and the replay match against Meath. That was probably, you know, when I went there in 89, I think I was just in awe of the actual stadium. But when I was more into football and, you know, knew more about the game. Yeah, certainly 96 and certainly 97 were three games that I watched, and obviously heartbreaking. But I think it was probably 97 and the Maurice Fitzgerald show that was put on show that day. Again, he was another person I loved watching growing up. How, you know, many of the time you'd be in the back garden or the local club trying to emulate some of his kicks from the sideline and stuff like that. And the performance he put on in 97 that year was just amazing. And that was certainly one memory, 96 and 97 of Mayo trying to get to the Holy Grail, but you know, obviously didn't. But yeah, there were two occasions that I'll always remember back and look on fondly.
Would Maurice Fitzgerald be your favourite player from that era, or would there be others that, even people from Mayo, who you might mention?
Yeah, I think Maurice certainly was definitely my favourite, and probably a close second, if not there, joint with him, probably be Kieran MacDonald. There were two that you know, he's probably a little bit further on than Maurice. You know, he started a little bit later, but there were two footballers that I just love watching and looking up to. And then further on, when he started, was obviously Colm Cooper, who'd be the same era as myself. It was normally the forwards that I like to follow, and the ones that are really skillful and, you know, maybe didn't always have the strength or the speed, but, you know, it was always their skill and maybe their cuteness, their game awareness that, you know, got them to where they were. I love Kieran MacDonald and love Maurice and Gooch because of their flamboyance and the way they just made football and taking a score look very, very easy.
And given that you got onto the Mayo squad before you were even 14, were there any women who would have made that list of favourite players that you enjoyed watching or who you wanted to emulate?
Yeah, I suppose growing up, it was probably a little bit more difficult to follow women's footballers because obviously there was nothing on TV and you didn't really see them. But one I do remember as I kind of joined the Mayo panel was Sue Ransbottom from Laois, who was, a brilliant forward for Laois. And, you know, who obviously I played against them when I joined and, you know, played Leash in the 2001 All-Ireland final and had a heartbreak loss to them by a point in the last couple of seconds. But yeah, she's certainly one that I'd have wanted to emulate and look up to. She was just a fantastic player and, you know, fantastic forward for Leash.
Now, just going back again to earlier part of your career, perhaps, what was your first memory of winning something that was really important to you and also of losing something that you really wanted to win?
Yeah, I suppose winning something that's really important, it's probably difficult. It's terrible as a sports person. You probably remember more of the defeats that you have. So I'll probably start with that. And that was certainly community games. I think I was just 10 or 11 years of age and you made it to Mosny, and getting to Mosny was a big thing because it was a weekend away. And certainly, I remember in that final, we played a team from Kerry called Beaufort, and we were winning all the way through. And one of our key players got injured maybe about 10 minutes to go and was taken off. And I remember not being too happy because our manager put on a girl who hadn't been there too often and probably wasn't our best sub that he put on. And we ended up losing that match by a point up in Mosny. And yeah, it's a game that still sticks with me and probably one that maybe when I look back on my career that drove me on to want more success. So yeah, that's definitely one of the defeats. Probably one of the early wins probably happened maybe a year later and our club got to Fela for the first time. And it happened to be that Mayo were hosting Fela. So the Fela final, we got to the Fela final, the A final in McHale Park. And I remember one of the girls' dads on the team, God rest him, he's dead now, would have said to me, I'm going to give you a fiver, £5, I think, at the time for every goal you score. So I think I notched up about 3 goals. So I was a happy 12-year-old heading off after the match. I don't know if it was the All-Ireland that was the medal in the back pocket or the £15 at the time. But yeah, that was certainly one of the earliest memories. I think it was the first time I ever got to play in McHale Park as well, which as a footballer growing up was one of the places you wanted to play in.
Indeed. It's funny, you mentioned the losing first. You have something in common with Roy Keane there again, that it always was him, the things that he lost that seemed to drive him more than the things that he won. How did you maintain that throughout your career, though? Was that just something that was always with you, that sense of winning and losing?
Yeah, I just think, you know, while you can learn a lot, from your wins, I think as an individual, you learn a huge amount from your defeats. And I think growing up, that was kind of always with me. You know, I've often spoke about my mom who died when I was 16 and, you know, she had a cancer battle for 3 years. I think it all kind of comes from that, watching her battle through. I kind of get that drive and you know, determination and wanting to succeed from her. So, yeah, I just think you just throughout your years, you learn and, you know, obviously in any sports career, you're going to have a lot more defeats than your victories. So, yeah, you just have to learn from them and it probably makes you more resilient and more tougher for the next day out. So, yeah, it's as a sports person, you probably look at the defeats.
When did you first become aware of Australian rules football and develop an interest in it and see yourself as possibly playing it?
Oh, well, I didn't ever see myself possibly playing it, number one. I kind of always had an interest, but that was just coming from Saturday mornings. And I think it was T.G. Cahir at the time or Tina G at the time would be showing highlights from Australia. I think it was a Saturday morning, something like 10 or 11 o'clock. And I used to watch that all the time. And I suppose that was around the Ty Kinnelly era. He was out playing football and obviously he'd be reported a little bit back here. So that's my only interest in it. And obviously, I just watched the highlight show, never watched too much live matches. And obviously, Tadhg winning the grand final, coming back and playing in an All-Ireland final the year later. But I had certainly never, ever thought of playing AFL. And, you know, that only came around by a chance meeting of a guy in China in 2016 that I ended up being out in Sydney a year later.
And how would you compare the two games? If you had gone to the Australian rules a lot earlier, do you think might you have actually stuck with it?
Yeah, it's a very hard question to answer. Now I love Australian rules. I love watching it. I love playing in it. You know, I think it's a super game. Would I have left Mayo to go and Carnacone to go and follow my dream of playing AFL? probably it'd be very hard. You know, I love probably my club and my county too much to do that. When it came for me, you know, I'd achieved everything I could with both club and county. So it had been difficult. It had been a hugely difficult decision at the moment. I'm glad I didn't have to make that decision. But yeah, I love watching the game. I love playing the game. It's a super game, obviously. And yeah, there's differences and there's some similarities to both AFL and GAA.
Now, I don't want to ask you about games that you have played in personally, but given, as you say, you watch so much sport, I want you maybe to give me some examples of things that you've watched or being at as an adult, which have really caught the imagination and still stick with you.
Yeah, I suppose probably harping back to my Man United fan, or being a real fan at that time, was probably the season of 99 when they done the treble. And I always remember watching the Champions League final at home. And obviously, you know, that's a magical game where they were 1-0 down for practically most of the match. And you're thinking this is done and it's over and we're going, you know, we're going for the treble, obviously with the FA Cup the week later. But you're looking at this as, you know, going for a Champions League final. I think that match and 89th minute, and obviously if Solskjaer and Sheringham comes up and scores the two goals probably in 3 minutes, that match was just amazing. That comeback was amazing. And I think that that attitude of Fergie and the Man United team of that the game is never over till it's over. That's why I probably love watching Man United more than most. So, yeah, that was certainly one that I love, that I'll remember. You know, I'll always remember. And I suppose, obviously, you have to probably look at the couple of different finals that Mayo have been in over the years as well, that we've been so close. Probably 2017, the All-Ireland final was probably the closest that we've, you know, I thought that they finally get over the line, and just a little bit of luck didn't come with them. So yeah, that's another one. And that's obviously in recent past that I've watched and I've thought, you know, this is heartbreak, you know, will they ever do it?
Do you take that almost as badly as you would if you were a part of the team?
Yeah, not far off. But yeah, like I'd be extremely nervous, especially for Mayo games. You know, being in the crowd watching them. You know, I'm probably not the best watcher when it's when you're as passionate about a team and as Mayo. So I'm probably not the best watcher. I remember that day I was up and down my seat more often for the last 10 minutes because, you know, you just couldn't sit. So yeah, I probably wouldn't be the best watcher, because at least when you're playing your sport, you're in control yourself, so you can do something. But yeah, I found, especially normally other finals I haven't been too bad, but I found that day was quite difficult. And you know, it was a day you ever wonder would they ever get over the line, obviously over the next few years.
Given that the O'Connor brothers are neighbours of yours, would you ever talk about your respective experiences in All-Ireland finals and how things have worked out differently for you?
You probably not to that level. You know, you'd obviously just talk to them about, like, you know, you'd probably leave it for a few months. But yeah, you talk about their experience in All-Ireland final. You know, they're two obviously amazing role models for our parish and, you know, footballers for our club. Yeah, but you probably wouldn't harbour to that level. You know, obviously Killian and missing his free off the post and stuff like that, that's, you know, probably for him and him only to be dealing with. But, you know, they've given us some great days out. You know, we still harbour hope. Who knows, that 2020 might be the year, or further down the line. We still have a great bunch of footballers here, and they've given so much joy to the county over the last, you know, 10 years or more, which has been brilliant.
You mentioned the Gooch earlier, one of your contemporaries as a great Gaelic footballer. But as an adult, who have been the sports people that you've admired the most?
Yeah, as an adult, obviously, you know, there's been probably, I suppose, in women's sports, you can't look any further than Katie Taylor. You know, she's done a massive amount for women's sport over the last decade. She's risen the profile. She's an amazing athlete. And then probably if it was a, you know, a male boxer, would probably be celebrated a lot more. But yeah, she's just phenomenal. I love, you know, love watching her fight and watching her train. She's just amazing. So she's probably certainly one. From a football point of view, in recent past, again, another guy that's the heart and soul of Mayo, and he retired obviously last year, is Andy Moore, and he's, you know, been brilliant. I love watching him. And for a guy in kind of the the final stages of his career to go and win a Player of the Year, you know, and to have the season he did, and not for Mayo not to win the All-Ireland was amazing. So yeah, they're probably ones that you look up to. You know, I probably tend to look up to ones that are, you know, at the end of their career and have put a lot in, because, you know, I know myself, because I'm at the same stage as them, that how difficult it is to be still keep going, and, you know, all the heartache that, you know, especially Andy has over the years, but how positive that he stays and keeps things going, and, you know, all that Katie Taylor has achieved in her sports career, and she's still looking for more. She's still wanting to win more, which, you know, is an attribute in her which I think is phenomenal.
Do you think women get enough credit for what they actually achieve in sport? Or do you ever see a day when you will get almost equal billing? Because so much of our time on television and the numbers who go to big events tend to be for men's sport.
Yeah, I think it's a work in progress. And I think, you know, since I even started out, you know, my mayoral career, which is, you know, the guts of nearly 24, 25 years ago, you know, things have progressed along. Probably not as fast as I'd hoped they'd progressed. You know, obviously attendances are getting better at matches and there's more media coverage and all that. But I don't know if there'll ever be a day where it'll be equal, you know, coverage or, you know, equal attendance at games. But like the more and more it improves, the better. You know, obviously the 2020 campaign that's there at the moment, I think that's doing phenomenal work. And some of the organisations that are sponsoring Lidl being one with the ladies football, I think they're highlighting the sport more, and more role models are being highlighted. And, you know, that's only a good thing for young boys and girls coming up, that they can have role models, whether it's male or female. As I said, when I was growing up, I didn't have the opportunity of many role models. Probably Sonia O'Sullivan was the only female role model I have. But I think young girls and boys growing up today have plenty of them.
Is it important, do you think, for girls and boys to play together for as long as possible, even to helping the physical development of girls in competing in sport?
Yeah, I'd definitely be one for it. I think the longer they can play, obviously, I think it's up to under 12 now in the GAA. I'd be advocating for it as long as possible, because I think for girls and for girls footballers or in any sport, I think because obviously men can do things quicker and faster and they're stronger, I think that only makes girls their skills and their development even better. And I think it'll end up that they'll become better athletes because of that.
How important was it that you had somebody like your school principal who was willing to get the girls equally involved with the boys? And are there coaches from who created a big early first impression on you who you still remember fondly?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's hugely important. I think that's where it all starts. Normally, either starts at home, but I think majority of your sporting career will always start from primary school and a very young age. So if you have a principal that's, you know, encouraging sport and encouraging participation for both boys and girls, I think, and it needs to be done for both boys and girls, I think you're on a winner. And I think, yeah, growing up, probably coaches that had a huge influence in me growing up, as I said, I spoke about him earlier, was our club manager at the time. He passed away last year, Jimmy Corbett. You know, he was, most of the footballers that has played with Cairnacone and played with Mayo has been under his wing at some stage and have been influenced by him. So, you know, what Mayo achieved in the early days, even though he wasn't involved in the management team, would a lot have been down to him and getting girls involved in football. So yeah, you're lucky throughout your time. I've had a lot of good coaches. Finbar Egan, probably my best coach I ever had with Mayo. And even the coach I have over in Australia now, Al McCollum, is another amazing coach. And, you know, you learn so much off them all the time. So they're hugely important.
You mentioned all male coaches there. I mean, do you see a greater role as well for female coaches? So, I mean, maybe even yourself?
Yeah, I think it's hugely important. I think it's happening now. Again, it's a thing that's going to take time and it's a work in progress. And, you know, I do love to see the day that maybe we'll have a female coach involved in a men's intra-county team. I know my own clubmate of mine is involved in a senior men's club team here, Fiona McHale. With Claire Morris Min. So yeah, I think it's happening. Obviously, Margs Darcy has been involved with Davy Fitz and in the hurling there. So I do think it's a work in progress and something that needs to be, and maybe sped up a little bit. And yeah, certainly it's something I'd hope to be involved in a couple of years' time.
Correspondent, a final question for you, which is the same question I'm putting to everybody in this series, but it's a game you might like to go to in the future. If there was only one live sporting event you were able to get to for the future, what would you like it to be?
Yeah, that's a very difficult one. I suppose because I've been at quite a good few live sporting events, Champions League semi-finals, and you know, obviously All Ireland. I'd have to pick one that you know I haven't been at before, and I suppose because I have a passion and a love for AFL, it'll be probably an AFL grand final in the MCG, which is holds just over 100,000. And yeah, I'd love it if it was the Giants, obviously men's team that were there last year but got defeated. So that would be probably the one now that I'd love to have the opportunity to go to.
Corey, would you believe that we've done five of these so far? You're the second person to nominate going to the MCG for a big game. But in the other case, it wasn't for Australian rules. It was for cricket. The idea that Ireland might play Australia in cricket in exactly the same venue. Two very, very different sports and a great venue. Corey Staunton, thank you so much for taking the time for joining us here on First Impressions. Some great stories there and some great memories brought back. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me on.